Where does the barbaric self-described caliphate in Iraq and Syria that goes by the name of ISIS or ISIL, that is, if you call the territory of Lebanon and Syria by the old Ottoman name, the Levant, where does it get its money, whatever you call it? The short answer, anywhere it can. It collects taxes, it collects ransoms for hostages, it sells oil from Syrian oil wells it controls, and according to the United Nations Security Council, ISIS gets millions from the trade in stolen cultural treasures. It's thought to be the second biggest source of funding. It's a well-organized operation, according to this antiques trader who called himself Mohammed and spoke to the BBC's Simon Cox.
I know for a fact these militants, they had connection overseas, and they already made the connection overseas, and they talked ahead of time, and they shipped it overseas using their connection abroad. But there's a lot of these militants who stole a lot of artifacts who still hide it in the country still.
According to a BBC investigation, the trade in stolen antiquities is brisk, despite a UN ban on the trade in Syrian and some Lebanese artifacts. Joining us is Simon Cox, investigative reporter and presenter for the BBC World Service and BBC Radio 4. Simon, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hi, John.
So how on the surface is this trade? How well known is it if you start investigating in Syria and Lebanon?
You know, what's surprising is before I went to Lebanon, I talked to antiques dealers here, archaeologists, guys who are sort of operating in the murky middle a little bit. And they were saying how open the trade was in Lebanon. And what was surprising was even just going round to some of the antiquity shops, you're offered things pretty quickly. I went into one shop where I was offered mosaics, and I'd been told by archaeologists mosaics are the one thing, if you can try and get them, that would definitely be looted, and the chances are they would have come from Syria. And it was really surprising. Within about 5 minutes, this guy in the antiquity shop was saying, for the right money, if you're serious, we can do a deal. It's going to cost tens of thousands of dollars, but he'd even ship it to the UK for me. So it was surprising how open it was if you just start looking.
And the interesting thing is that the artifacts don't have to be authentic to produce cash for terrorists. How does that work?
We talked to a middleman who operated in Turkey, because the two big areas that are used are Turkey and Lebanon. They've both got very porous borders with Syria. And we talked to a guy who operated as a middleman between smugglers and dealers in Turkey. And he actually brought over a consignment for us and showed us on his webcam. And there were a lot of fakes in there. They were human statues, animal statues, because these are the ones that ISIS will destroy when people excavate them, because they'll say they're haram, they're un-Islamic, they're idolatrous. And what is useful with that is if you have a load of fakes in there, then if you're caught by the police, you can say, well, look, these are just tourist trinkets, you know, they're not real. Whereas what you'll have is within them, you will have some real gems. And we actually got an archaeologist here to look at pictures and the video that this guy had shown us in Turkey. And he said lots of them are fake, but there are genuine things in there that we had actually seen very similar pieces for sale in antiquity shops in London that would be 2,000-3,000 years old, some of them.
Here's Dr. Assad Seif, who's that archaeologist.
We are getting from the police objects that were seized, and they are thousands of objects, but most of them are fakes. So we have hundreds of authentic objects, but we have lots of fakes. And we know that in Syria they have workshops. And in those workshops they do lots of fake objects because it was a flourishing market before the war and still during the wartime.
So it seems as though ISIS has really taken a pre-existing trade and ramped it up.
I think the important thing about ISIS, one of the guys we talked to is a terrorism finance expert and worked a lot in the Middle East, had worked in banking before, was saying that they will make money wherever they can. They look for the cracks in the system. And this is a pretty gaping crack, because as well as making money from it, if you're caught, the punishment is not very harsh, really. In Lebanon, even when we talked to this guy called Colonel Nicholas Saad, who's head of their Office of International Thefts, he said, look, we're trying to crack down on it, but when people are caught, they're not really going to face very serious sentences. And even you had a very big case in the States last year of someone who was caught smuggling antiquities from Egypt, And he was told, this guy, he confessed, he could face maybe 20 years in prison. In the end, he did a month's house arrest and he got a $200 fine.
And Simon Cox, before we go, I mean, we should note that it's often said that ISIS flourished in the chaos of the Syrian civil war. Here is an example, and we'll speak again to that individual, Muhammad, who we heard from just a few minutes ago, just how the chaos and the literal rubble of the Syrian civil war has enabled this trade.
Actually, ISIS are the one from day one. They're the one who under control of this business, and they're the one who stole most of the antiquity and artifacts from museums around the countries and in Aleppo, especially Aleppo museums.
And Aleppo, we should note, is a place that was pretty much razed to the ground during the Syrian civil war.
And interestingly, you know, we talked to a guy who's the director of antiquities in Damascus, and he was saying that they know that in the museum in Raqqa, which of course is an ISIS stronghold, that at least 1,000 items had gone missing from that museum. And we know from aerial photos as well that have been taken that in areas that ISIS controls, there's been a lot of excavation. You know, a lot of these artifacts that are coming onto the market will be ones that are just dug up. We were even sent a video which we tried to verify. We were told it was from just outside Raqqa, and it was just someone who dug down into a well, and you could hear a voiceover of someone saying, look, I can see signs here where there are tombs. Let's excavate here. It is a flourishing trade. It's easy for them to do, easy for them to control. And the smuggler who we heard earlier on was actually saying to us that they take a tax, ISIS, 20% of everything that's sold. And when you think there's millions and millions worth of dollars of these antiquities that are being sold, there's money for them to be made.
Who buys this stuff, and can a UN ban stop the trade in conflict antiquities?
The main markets are really Europe, the Gulf, and then the US, but it tends to come through Europe first of all. The two big antiquities markets, Germany and the UK, they haven't had any prosecutions or arrests for this. But when we talked to the guy who used to run the UK antiquities unit for the police, he said, don't read too much into that. That doesn't mean that it's not happening. He was actually convinced that looted Syrian antiquities were on sale here, that they'd been seized here, but it's just very hard to prosecute and really hard to verify. You know, when you find something, pinpointing that it's come from ISIS-controlled territory, obviously it's very, very hard to verify. So one of the ways is trying to deter and shame collectors and dealers from trading in this. But all the people we spoke to in the art market just said, you know, that's really, really tough to do.
Antiquities trade fueling ISIS's coffers. Simon Cox is an investigative reporter and presenter for the BBC World Service and the BBC Radio 4. Thanks so much, Simon.
Thanks, John.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.